Hello and welcome to Platforms and Pitfalls. I'm Rowan.
And I am Blue.
And we are here to talk about game design. After much delay, we finally have our MP Systems episode for you. This was actually like one of the very first episodes we made when testing the idea, and that we just sort of used to confirm if this was all going to work or not.
To be clear, testing the idea of a podcast.
So you got a prototype. We've got to go through the game design process for our own show about game design.
Just weren't clear about what idea we were testing, that's all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we finally decided to give this sort of beta test episode its own proper released episode. And so we're going to talk about MP Systems.
Only one of the games in this list crossover with that beta list, I think.
Yes, that's right. Only one crossover directly. There's sort of a half related one in here too.
We've grown so much in 3 years. I'm sorry, I'm just tangent.
Yeah, tangents are, we get the tangents out of the way now, we won't have tangents later. Very important, very good. So, MP systems are very common in Japanese role-playing games or command battle RPGs or whatever term you prefer most. It's a system where you have limited skills that you use the resource called MP or sometimes TP or what have you. It goes down and it doesn't generally automatically recover, or if it does automatically recover, it generally recovers slowly. This is in comparison to a lot of more classical Western RPGs like BioWare's work and even MMOs, where you generally gain back this resource fairly frequently. Whereas one of the defining features of MP is generally that it does not recover immediately or very quickly. I think I would be the normal thing to say.
Yep. And yeah, I would think of this in a lot of Western senses as abilities on cooldown versus just limited use abilities. And this is kind of trying to be a limited use ability, but they give you a number and then you can use just based on that number. Different abilities cost different amounts, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And so while we're not looking at any Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest directly, we're looking at games that sort of take this idea of MP and take it in an interesting or different direction. And with that, we're going to look at our first example. Blue Reflection is a 2017 socially focused command battle RPG developed by Gust, designed and directed by Azusa Takahashi, and produced by Junzo Hosoi. So Blue Reflection overall is a game that's a little like the Persona series, where its focus is on bonding with people, which directly gives us power. And a lot of the game involves around entering a sort of collective consciousness in which you do battle with various monsters in fairly traditional turn-based RPG combat that has like minor grandeur influences, and in that all characters are sort of moving along a timeline at different rates, and when they get to a certain point they will have their turn and reappear on the timeline depending on what actions they did. But for our purposes, fairly simple in that we just have a pool of MP that we consume with abilities, and we have a few ways to recover MP, one of which is that we end the battle. Blue Reflection is one of the few JRPGs that has just MP fully restoring on every individual battle. And this makes a lot of difference in how the game flows compared to other similar games, in that when you start a combat, you can just go all out in most sort of general encounters. Every non-boss encounter is generally fairly easy to manage because of this.
I want to say that while we're here at this point, this methodology simplifies a lot of design, because you can create an encounter knowing your player will always have access to maximum amount of abilities they have. So it's not about how far through a dungeon crawl they are. It really strictly is about what abilities are available. And then outside of that, they'll have everything at the beginning of the battle, right?
So yeah, and Blue Reflection is actually a really interesting game on that. No, not to get too far off, but because you gain all your stat points not through experience points, but through social interactions with other characters, the game generally has a very exact idea of what level you are, like within a few stat points, basically. And you can't use items in combat, and there's no real economy to speak of. So there's not a lot of ways to get drastically ahead of the power curve outside of some creative use of stat points and things. So this game's very dialed in that sense.
Yeah, there's a difference in philosophy between what actions can you do in a battle versus the prep that you can do going into it. And when MP is not a resource to track across battles, that actually cuts down on a lot of that prep going in.
When we think of a lot of RPGs, there's sort of a in-battle and preparation spectrum that they can exist on. How much is this game about pre-battle and how much is about the in-battle actions you take? Blue Reflection is about as much as you can possibly be on the in-battle choices side of things.
Which is super cool.
Yeah, but where Blue Reflection becomes really interesting and is why it's on this list about MP systems is its boss battles. So Blue Reflection has some very long boss battles. And these boss battles are sort of effectively simulating the kind of MP management you would have over the course of an entire dungeon in another RPG. So these battles are, even the early boss battles are like 15, 20 minutes, which is very long.
Very long. That's a slog. I don't know how many listeners are like frequenters of JRPGs, but like 15 to 20 minute boss battles happen in the end of most JRPG games, not near the beginning.
Yeah. And there are only a few of these very significant boss battles, but they're all very narratively built up. Each of them add a small system to combat to help make it feel distinct and momentous. But it's in these battles that we really get to see some of the unique features of this combat system, other than just it being very generous about recovering MP after combat. So in this game, characters learn spells that recover MP. So MP starts being about time management. Do I spend a turn healing one character for a lot of MP? Do I spend a turn healing everyone for a little bit? Do I spend a turn recovering my MP and recovering a shared resource that could allow people to take extra turns, called Aether Charge? And these choices are really cool in that a lot of RPGs tend to not ask for a lot of that. Like, it generally is pretty simple as to when and where you should
attack and heal is a lot of attack JRPGs and heal. Yeah.
A lot of these sorts of RPGs generally are balanced around not knowing whether you can recover your MP easily. So, you know, a Final Fantasy game doesn't generally assume that you have a dozen elixirs on you.
Elixirs and ethers are considered rare items, most Final Fantasies.
And maybe it assumes that you have the one elixir you found in the dungeon, but then most players will avoid using that, so it doesn't really matter. And modern games tend to sort of factor in more the conservative player than the using everything player. So what's really cool here is that you have a lot of thought process in these very, very long combats about how and when to use MP. A lot of very thoughtful things of, oh, in a regular encounter, I can use this ability that's expensive and does it quickly. But here, what is the most damage per a unit of MP? Or what bonus effects do I really need in this moment? And things like that.
When you can't alpha strike down an enemy, you have to think about what happens in, you know, 4 turns, 5 turns. When you're out of MP, are you going to be able to survive if the boss, even if you've never played the game before, if the boss chucks out an attack that just halves your health, quarters your health, what do you do then, right? So there is this feeling of MP now becomes valuable beyond just allows me to hit very hard.
And time is a real factor in Blue Reflection's combat system in that the boss is generally made up of a core part, and then alongside 2 or 3 other parts, each of which have their own turn. But whenever you take down the small parts, they will come back in a few rounds. So time spent taking out the other parts will give you time to catch back up, but they won't advance the battle itself. And I think MP really factors into all those equations, because of course, the attacks that are going to be most useful against many targets take up more resources.
Yep. Economy of action is a thing in like all command-based RPGs, where just how often and how powerful your actions are, those are like the two really core factors for you to like weigh against each other, and they are controlled by how much MP do you have, effectively.
Yeah, and so I think that sort of is why this goes great early on. There's an emphasis on turns and action economy with this MP system that games that don't have this sort of long-term thing to factor in can't do as well as I think MP allows. Like in a game with just cooldowns, you can just use a lot of the abilities whenever the cooldown ends, if that's the only resource you're waiting on. And that, you know, when to use things matters a lot, of course, but MP just adds a little bit of extra thought and build up to certain attacks and things. And I think that's all we need to really start off this and move on to our next game to sort of compare this sort of system with.
Looking forward to it.
With that, let's move on to our next game.
Persona Q is a 2014 first-person dungeon crawl and a crossover between the Etrian Odyssey series and the Persona series, developed by P Studio, directed by Daisuke Kanada, and produced by Katsura Hashino. If you're unfamiliar with the Etrian Odyssey games, we'll get into that, but basically it is the lovable casts of Persona 3 and 4 contrived into a situation together in their like canonical ages, which is actually time-separated. But that doesn't matter, into the an Etrian Odyssey-styled dungeon crawl exploration, where basically, in order to figure out what happened to them, why they're stuck together in this weird not world, they go through a couple of, I think they're called labyrinths in the game. It's been a while.
Yeah, since. They're called labyrinths. Each of them are conveniently five floors, except for the last one.
So to explain the Etrian Odyssey side of things, it really is a old school Japanese, I want to say mid-80s to mid-90s dungeon crawl experience. And if you're not familiar with what that specifically feels like, it is very much a slog. I don't know, like, and that sounds bad, but like that's the draw of Etrian Odyssey, right? You have to slog through a dungeon.
These games are designed to evoke the feeling of playing the classic wizardry games.
Yeah.
Where you are going, you know, from top of a dungeon to the bottom of a dungeon.
And you are being worn down. A big part of it, it's not just like dungeon exploration, right? A big part of the game is wearing a party down. It is tiring to go through a dungeon. And that's very ludonarrative resonance in a way that like doesn't quite exist much.
How far can you get in a single run? And you want to get far enough to have made some real progress, found a new shortcut? Because these dungeon layouts are dense with shortcuts, ways to backtrack, significant milestones to have overcome, like key items that will help you progress in things.
When you understand this style of world building and dungeon building, you honestly start to understand a lot of the legacy of other popular games, like where Metroid, the way, you know, how interconnected that map is, where Dark Souls, where how interconnected that map is. A lot of that has its core ideas here, where you might have made progress, but you didn't get very far. You've just made progress. You've made it easier for yourself the next time. So how does this tie in with MP? Well, that's a big part of the slog part of it. In order to wear you down, you need to start losing resources. And it's not necessarily items. It's just how much can you do the things that you want to do in every fight. To this end, Persona Q features a mostly traditional MP system. You have, you know, an X number, and each spell costs a different amount. Let's say healing costs 4. And, you know, your MP bar at the beginning of the game might be as high as 20. At the end of the game might be as high as 150, right? Something like that.
Those sound good. Although I think the opening might be a bit low for a healer, but anyway, not important.
Not super important here. Now, if that was all that was there, this would be effectively the same as a Final Fantasy or a Dragon Quest or any other Etrian Odyssey game. The thing that's really cool, we feel, about Persona Q is one of the ways that the personas matter is that they provide temporary. Yeah, that's the word I was going to say, buffer. But the first adjective I'll use here is temporary MP, and technically temporary HP as well.
The personas in this game, by the way, you're equipping to your characters is sort of an additional set of skills on top of their base things.
Yeah. For anyone who's familiar with Persona, but not this game specifically, it's also worth noting that every character can equip extra persona, not just the main characters. And this is important because that temporary MP is so well balanced. I am quite in awe with good numbers in games, and this is definitely a game with good numbers, because a lot of the time it feels like you don't have enough temporary MP to guarantee finish normal encounters without wasting permanent MP.
And this tension's really important for a lot of the game, because making that choice to dip into permanent MP is what's going to make you have to go back to the start of the dungeon.
Yeah, so this is where the slog is.
And another real thing is that you can't use the temporary MP between battles. So if you want to heal and not use the permanent resource, you have to heal in a time where time is limited.
That's right. We go back to action economy. Of just in a fight, if your primary goal is to end it, now you have this weird secondary goal of, man, if I could just find the space to heal here, I would save myself, you know, some MP going forward for the next few rooms. And that's a really cool mental gymnastics to perform in the middle of a dungeon crawl, especially in comparison with our previous game, Blue Reflection, where you don't have to think about that between, you know, your dungeon crawl sequences. You only think of these kinds of questions in the final boss fight. In Persona Q, that's the entire gameplay, right? Like,
small correction, not just the final boss fight, in each of the significant boss fights.
Pardon me. That's what I meant. I missed out. Final boss fight of a dungeon sequence or equivalent, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so we have this system that encourages a certain specific use, but we also combine this with the Shin Megami Tensei and Persona format of weaknesses being extremely significant,
mm-hmm.
to the point that a lot of combat is, if you are willing to burn resources, you could finish it in a round, maybe.
Absolutely, yeah.
In Persona Q, since you have that little buffer, if you have a good party sub-persona composition, you can probably kill off everyone in a round or two if you're aware of what's in the dungeon and ready for a lot of encounters. And so learning that process, learning what's on the floor of the dungeon, learning what sub-persona builds will help you tackle the things ahead of you, will help you use your MP a lot more efficiently, letting you get a lot further in a dungeon without having to dash back up to the festival, the town, effectively, in other games, to recover. And that process of learning is really fun and engaging, I felt. Like, whenever you go to a new floor, you have to relearn what's on this floor and what do you need.
It's such a smart game, because although you might be encountering the same types of enemies, the enemy party composition, like, oh, enemy A and enemy B are now potentially going to appear together, that might change the way you want to approach that fight now. It's also worth noting that, like, you're not penalized for retreating, like, literally just physically moving out of the dungeon, getting everything back, and then going back in. You retain all of your XP. You retain the progress insofar as your party got stronger. You just may not have made map progress, which, playing on player psychology, that really feels like you didn't succeed.
It is possible to do a dungeon run at a financial loss.
True.
It's very hard to do a dungeon run at a financial loss after a certain point, but early on, you can certainly feel that tension a lot more, because how much it costs to recover your party's resources is based on their level. So yep. The higher level you are, the more it will cost to get that full recovery back at the inn.
Yeah. You do have to pay to get back to full health and MP, though. If you manage to make decent headway, probably won't be much in comparison.
Yeah, if you fought until you're exhausted, you probably made a profit, but you had a very bad run-in, maybe not.
Happens. I suppose there's that last system to talk about then?
Yeah, so this system is probably most interesting on a very specific character, Chie. Did you use her in your playthrough?
In and out, yeah, I did.
Yeah. So this last system is the boost system. When you strike a weakness, classically important in this franchise, your next skill will cost zero. So if you use your temporary MP to strike a weakness, your next skill will also cost you nothing. And you could chain this indefinitely, but you lose the boost if you get hit by the opponent after gaining it. And the boost also ensures that you go first in your next turn. So the first time you get boost, that's useful. But the second time you want to try and continue the chain of having boost, the chances of getting hit if you go at the start of a round are much higher because you have a whole round to have to avoid damage rather than your character's part in turnover. But anyway, one character in particular, Chie, has extraordinarily low base MP. And she also starts with some very expensive costing moves, like Power Charge, which costs more than her basic MP pool. Like, she doesn't get enough MP to cast that without this boost ability until almost the very end of the game. But it's one of the ways in which the MP system in this game gives characters very distinct and different dynamics. Because of this system, Chie is really hunting for a weakness strike to get a power charge to then do something else, which is different to maybe the Persona 3 or 4 protagonists, which have relatively balanced in their output and can cast a lot of different things, which means they can probably strike a weakness, but they're not getting as huge a benefit from it, possibly, as Chie will generally get.
They may not kill, but they can keep going for a while so long as they retain the boost.
Yeah, and so it's really interesting, like, these two games back-to-back, Persona Q and Blue Reflection, because a lot of these choices that we're making across the entire dungeon, Blue Reflection is condensing down into a single boss fight. When do I burn resources? How do I burn resources? And it's supposed to feel like this long, intense, dramatic thing. And so Blue Reflection is using this MP to also enforce its narrative of taking something that's much bigger and beyond your, that should be beyond what your abilities are. Yeah. And Persona Q is using that same long form draining of resources to emphasize how, like, long and dangerous and complex these labyrinths are. And the fact that you can't do them in a single trip, I think, is a really big part of making these labyrinths feel scary. And MP is one of the key ways in which they force players into this cycle of coming up after doing a bunch of exploration, selling items, taking a moment to re-equip themselves. MP, like, also helps just reinforce that loop of checking in on how your party's doing and creating a nice time to do all that character customization rather than just doing it in the dungeon wherever you find something, which I think is a really interesting additional benefit of this kind of system.
I suppose with that, we are ready to move on to game numero 3. Persona 5 Strikers is a 2020 Persona 5 action RPG spin-off developed by Omega Force and P Studio, directed by Mumon Usuda and Daisuke Kaneda, produced by Daisuke Kaneda and Kenichi Ogasawara, and designed by Takaaki Ogata. This is a pseudo-continuation of a story, like, not the story, but, like, a story after the base Persona 5 game, which I make a distinction because Persona 5 Royal doesn't follow this.
Yeah, this is not a sequel to Persona 5 Royal. This is a sequel to Persona 5, which was an interesting choice and makes me wonder when Royal and this game were both started in development.
So yeah, it's fascinating. However, it is a fantastic game, and that is purely bias seeping through here, because this is one of the most recent games I've played. It's certainly one of the high-profile games of this year, as the English version came out in 2021 to date this episode. And how would we describe the gameplay? So the genre is Musou, technically, which is Dynasty Warriors-esque.
So it's sort of not. In this action RPG where you have a lot of movement options to jump about the environment and things, not a lot, you have a fairly typical amount of movement options. You can enter combats, which are represented by generic enemies on the map, or somewhat generic enemies on the map, that erupt into
a small platoon. Yeah.
Once that platoon has emerged, we go into combat that resembles sort of traditional Dynasty Warriors-esque gameplay, which this is a spin-off crossover with. But because we're not doing the whole big battle things in the same way that Dynasty Warriors would, I don't want to say it's, like, just a Musou game, because that gives a very different vibe.
Yeah, which, you know, if you only play literally the opening fight, you might get confused by, because the opening fight where it's tutorializing a lot of things, that's very Musou.
Yeah, that's very classic Musou, and that's not what most of the game is. A very fascinating crossover in that sense. Like, it's a really interesting mix of Musou and RPGs, it feels just as much Persona as Warriors, as opposed to Warriors with a skin, which is what
Hyrule Warriors.
Higher Warriors and so on tend to feel like.
Which is why it's like kind of in this list, because it's not a very traditional RPG, especially in terms of its combat. However, it does adhere to this idea of your characters have a limited MP pool, which allows them to do strikingly effective things to the battlefield in the right positions. There's another big difference between like the general Musou formula and Persona 5 Strikers. There's a time freeze for you to be able to place abilities. You can see the area that an ability will hit, what enemies it will hit, and you can just time stop and like try to place that correctly. Not every Musou has that. Most, I think, don't.
Most don't. Even the ones that have like skill selection. So in this game, you hold, I think it's R1 to bring up your skill list that is very much like the skill list in Persona 5 with about the same amount of options. So you've got a lot to pick from, like you would in your classic Persona games. And you get the same sort of, the enemy is weak to this, it's resistant to this, so that you can make an informed choice. Usually in other Musou games that have skills, you would just have like, hold the button. Here are the four options you can pick from. Press the right face button to use that skill, basically. And they're much more simple than I think these skills are generally. They're much less RPG-like.
So because Strikers has all of these RPG weakness, resistance interplay, being able to place a skill in the right spot to hit efficiently the enemies you want to hit becomes important, hence the time stop to allow you to like try to position yourself better. In a lot of ways, that time stop makes it pretty turn-based. Because if you get enough stacking weakness hits on the enemy, they get knocked down, they don't move, they get stunned, they become vulnerable, right?
And this means that you want to use MP a lot, because MP is how you get your knockdowns, and knockdowns will let you deal with the fight significantly more quickly. Like getting your all-out attacks and things will not immediately end a fight, but will get you most of the way there if it doesn't.
Gives you a very, very good chunk of damage, that's for sure.
And if you were to do that all manually, it would take you significantly longer time. You would risk taking more damage, which would end up costing you MP anyway, because MP is one of the main ways in which you would heal.
Mm-hmm. So, with that kind of established, this game, in terms of feel of progression through a dungeon, is not as sloggy by far as compared to Persona Q. But it's still not quite as freeform, let's just throw all of our MP out as Blue Reflection, because you do still conserve MP between fights, or conserve is the wrong word there, retain your MP levels between fights.
You can only recover all your MP by either using items that cost currency and so on, or by returning to the start of the dungeon, I believe, right?
Correct. Exiting the dungeon.
Exiting the dungeon.
Effectively. Yeah, exiting the dungeon and then coming back in. Unlike a traditional Persona game, there is no time advancement outside of dungeons. So you are free to do this as many times as you want. If you want to grind, you can literally go into a checkpoint, kill everything around it, hop back out. Bob's your uncle. You have full HP and MP again, gained all the experience. You don't have to pay for this recovery, unlike Persona Q. It's not an in system. And it's a lot nicer in that regard. But, you know, eventually you want to progress through the dungeon and you'll have to slog your way to the next checkpoint. And at that point, if you're not, like, if you didn't grind, if you just played to the level that the game wants you to be at, there's a couple of points where you can be caught a bit off guard in terms of, oh, I'm running low on healer MP because a number of characters can heal, right?
And there are a number of ways in which MP conservation ties into how you approach navigating the spaces. If you get the drop on an enemy, you will have an advantage going into combat. You can either engage with the stealth mechanics or just land a hit in advance. You can get a smaller advantage than the raw stealth one. And this means that if you can get those stealth encounters, you can get through combats much more efficiently without wasting as much MP, which means you can get by a lot easier. And so a lot of this game, especially early on at least, is asking you to sort of engage with the stealth. It's not a huge issue if you, like, make a few mistakes or don't get the perfect stealth combos and things, but you definitely feel an advantage if you get the drop on an enemy with the stealth mechanics, I feel.
There's a very specific feel to Persona games, for me, where you end up using a lot of MP to heal. So it feels like every time you get hit, you lose MP. I don't know if that happens to every other Persona player.
This is a very Shin Megami Tensei thing overall, actually. Just that everyone hits pretty hard, so you can only take, even early or late in the game, only a few hits. And also, these games have skills that don't just cost MP, but can cost HP instead. So there's a lot of interesting choices about when to heal, whether you should wait till everyone in the party's a little hurt to use the heal everyone spell, which is technically more MP efficient than healing everyone single target. But the single target can heal more MP in a single round to one person, which can be more valuable.
So it's a very interesting toss-up. In the traditional turn-based Persona game, Persona 5 base game, or even comparing it to Persona Q, it's quite easy to make these assessments of, yeah, I know how to mitigate the amount of damage that the entire party is going to be taking. And so MP is very effectively used for healing outside of, you know, X clauses that you leave yourself. With Strikers, with Persona 5 Strikers, one of the interesting things is that there's a lot of moving parts, meaning you and your enemies are moving, and you don't always get the most amount of time to react to an enemy putting an ability on your head. Because, like, while the time stop makes it feel quite turn-based in a lot of cases, if you just let the enemy roam wild, it's still an action game. So MP use offensively to stagger or stun or cause weak states is quite critical in certain dungeons, especially where if you let the enemy run loose, you will just start hemorrhaging HP, which translates to more MP that you would have lost if you had just hit them with a weakness to put them on their butt.
Yeah, the winning move is to not get hit.
Very much so.
And so attacking is, you know, the best offense is the best defense is a very strong sentiment in a lot of this franchise overall.
We've talked about bosses in a couple of these instances already in Blue Reflection and Persona Q. Bosses are also interesting in Strikers because now you're presented with a health bar too long for you to burst down. Depending on how you're kitted out, depending on your level relative to the boss, it might take you multiple full downs. So bosses are resistant to being downed, but it might take you multiple full downs to take a boss out. And this can sometimes represent more MP than your characters have in a full tank, which is to say you might have to use recovery items. And so this, like, MP conservation in a longer boss fight, not because you're trying to deal damage, but because you're trying to keep the boss on the back foot to not deal too much damage to you, is a super interesting thing that Persona 5 Strikers does.
And so you've got that real question of when is the best time to use it? You know that after the first time you have one of these encounters, the next time you have a big boss encounter, that you won't have enough to get through the whole thing without using items. And there's that question of whose MP is the most valuable in this party at this time. And usually in this game, of course, it's the character that you're controlling's MP that is the most valuable. But that choice of who you should be controlling is still very valuable. And it can be beneficial even to have other party members also having their MP topped up as well.
When to just try to down the boss is also interesting because some bosses have like buildup where the game will tell you like, oh, the boss is getting angry or the boss is looking at this prop in the room knowingly. That might be cue for you to try to just knock them down with like specific targeted weak strikes and then like break them out of their attack pattern. That's going to be hard to dodge.
Yeah, the MP in here is like when to push, when to pull back. And if you need to push and you don't have any MP,
what do you do?
What do you do?
Yeah, what do you do? Because there's an amount of skill-based movement where you can dodge boss attacks. I stopped trying after a while because it was much safer and less stressful to just weak point strike them. But early on, you know, there was a point where I was just, I'm just going to run away. I'm just going to keep running away and try to find space. Don't advise that actually in the long term for this game. That gets hard. So something to keep in mind. And there's a really cool like interplay, right? For MP being a physical action evasion game, and then when you just dump everything, all your points.
Yeah, and with that, let's look at our next game that I think is more about gaining MP than using it. Tactics Ogre Let Us Cling Together is a 2010 strategy RPG developed by Square Enix, directed by Hiroshi Minagawa, produced by Eisuke Yokoyama, and designed by Yasumi Matsuno. So this particular version is for the PSP and a remake of the original Tactics Ogre developed by Quest back in the mid-90s. But it's a lot of the same original creative stuff, and it's a very faithful remake with a lot of interesting tweaks here and there. But the system we're talking about has been consistent in this game in its various iterations, which is we have an MP system. Well, first, actually, this game is kind of the predecessor to Final Fantasy Tactics. So we have an isometric battle view where we can move characters around a board, various squares per character, and the characters have different ranges based on their abilities. Usually in this genre,
positioning, super important.
Positioning, height, very important. Height less so than position, but yeah. Generally, this game has fairly high difficulty compared to a lot of other games in this genre. Characters can die very quickly with poor positioning and poor sort of order of operations.
The average fight takes a while. Like,
that's right.
Expect to take 10 to 15 minutes per fight. This isn't the kind of game where you trivialize fights anymore. Not really. Yeah.
So this sort of is a little like Blue Reflection in that we recover all resources after an encounter. But unlike Blue Reflection, which is part of sort of the command battle RPG genre that traditionally is like running through a dungeon, consuming resources, these individual skirmishes, usually between, you know, your party of 6 to 12 characters versus an enemy party of about similar numbers, there's a lot going on. There's many turns spent just getting into position before we start attacking and so on and so forth. But what's really distinctive about this game compared to everything like it is that you start with 0 MP at the start of every encounter, and every character at the start of their turn will gain back a portion of MP. So at the very start of the game, you might be gaining back like 10 or 15 MP, which is enough to cast a single light spell. So you might have to wait many rounds just getting into the right position, waiting until you have the right MP, avoiding getting hit before you can cast, you know, the big spell that's going to really change the battle, that's going to score the fatal blow against multiple enemies or inflict a large group with stun or what have you. You could go every turn do something small, and for a lot of early encounters, that is more or less how mages function. But once you start getting a variety of spells in your given specialty, you start having to make these choices of when is the best time? If I do this now, I won't be able to do this later. Which should I pick? And so on.
This game is pretty long form complexity is one of the ways I would describe it, where not just like, you know, overall in the game's duration, how are you like, you know, spacing yourself out, orienting yourself towards a certain outcome, but like in a battle, in a fight, oftentimes I feel like watching this because I haven't played it, you would go in with an idea of, I want to get to a position where, you know, my mage or my heavy hitter can do this. That's what I feel like.
Yeah, that's right. And so this game has battling battles where it's all a lot about just being in the right spot at the right time to do the right thing. And the game is a little generous in letting you get that right in this particular remake, especially because you can actually turn back the turn clock so that you can spend that turn correctly. And the game is difficult enough to require that sort of turning back the clock so that you can get that spell done on the correct turn, because you can't necessarily cast that key fireball two turns in a row to catch up for that mistake.
Yeah.
So MP it's very much a limiting factor in a lot of your choices, but it's limiting in the opposite direction to so many other games. You know, in Blue Reflection and Persona Q, those MP systems are really geared towards letting you go all out very quickly. You know, in Persona Q, you want to finish a battle as soon as possible, and your temporary MP buffer is the way in which you do that. Like, you try and stick to as little excess of that as possible, but you still want to use it to get through that encounter without taking much damage. Here, it's very important that your characters that rely on MP a lot more survive to the point they can use it. So characters with more general skill, or sorry, more warrior-like skills, you know, like I want to do a shield bash or something, they're not so constrained by MP. They'll gain enough to do what they want quite often. But the mages are really affected by this a lot because they're only going to have a few turns in a combat that really, really matter, and they've got to be right. And because of... spells don't have a lot of range, actually, compared to maybe other similar games in the genre, so there's a lot of needing to be in the right place and maneuvering to that, since these characters often don't have great movement either. And so MP makes this nice tension of, like, building up to the turn you get to do the cool thing, which I think is something that's rare in these sorts of games, rather than just feeling like you're wasting those opening turns just moving into position, which is quite common in like Final Fantasy Tactics.
And I think that kind of like plays into it, right? Because opening turns are going to be movement, but also opening turns are when you have the lowest MP throughout the entire fight. So like, it pulls double duty of, yeah, you're getting into position, and you may not necessarily want to get there super fast, because in a lot of other tactics games, I find movement is king, right? Like you are literally restricted by how far you can move and what you can hit in any given turn. In Tactics or Let Us Sling Together, even if you got there super fast, are you sure you're going to be able to do what you need to do, right?
It's not just being in the right place, it's being in the right place at the right time. And, you know, if you along the way cast a little stun spell, maybe that means you can't cast the thing you need when you get to the other side of the map that has the boss there. Hopefully you won't make that mistake, but maybe you will. Maybe I have.
Maybe we're being fairly reductionist with our like glance at this game, because we're strictly looking at the MP system and how that affects the dynamism of combat, because this is a complex game with quite a few, like, you know, factors that lean into each other, positioning, facings, backstabs, status effects, etc., etc. So there's a lot more that goes into this, but for the purposes of like an interesting design, right? So one of, I would describe all the more traditional games, especially like Persona Q, where the idea is that you want to kill the enemy, because if you don't kill the enemy, they're going to kill you. You're each just deadly to each other. And you want to alpha strike the enemy. You definitely still want to alpha strike the threats in a tactics game. The less time a powerful enemy has to wander the battlefield and smack your mages around, the better. But now you just have to be very careful about, first of all, where you're stepping to not accidentally walk into range prematurely. But also that once you're in range, if you can target them, there is a semi-decent chance that you are under threat. You are, you know, threatened by them as well. So really, really great like interplay of these mechanics that just works with the MP system, starting from zero and slowly regenerating or increasing over the battle. Regenerating implies you had it prior.
And it also changes the feel of mages in this game to other games, in that it's not uncommon in, say, Final Fantasy Tactics to run out of MP and just sort of be like, okay, this character doesn't really matter anymore. They're just going to run around and hopefully not die. Whereas here, you know, if your mage is alive, they are either able to do something or they're working up to being able to do something.
They are either a threat now or a threat in two turns, right? Like,
and that is something that I really appreciate. Like, it can feel, in this genre, it can feel like things are often very samey, especially like certain dynamics with like magic and things. And so it can feel like a very small tweak, but it really just changes the experience of so many very standard aspects of this genre in a way that is very impressive for such a, what can appear to be a very small change, just making numbers go in a different direction, but it really does change things. And with that, let's look at a game that changes everything. Our last game today is Chrono Cross, a 1999 command battle RPG developed by Squaresoft, directed by Masato Kato, produced and designed by Hiromichi Tanaka, and composed by Yasunori Mitsuda. We don't usually include the composer, but Chrono Cross has an extremely good soundtrack.
It's one of those Square games. Yeah.
It really is.
Square has this like amazing penchant for just having great audio and are then very protective of it, understandably. So.
Yes, but MP does not stand for music points. It stands for magic points. So Chrono Cross doesn't actually have MP, so it shouldn't be in this list, is the easy answer. So what Chrono Cross has is a very cool interplay between attacking and casting magic, but it also has no free actions. So in everything else we've talked about so far, then we haven't really talked about this much, attacking is a free action in that it doesn't cost any permanent resource other than time.
Or even temporary resource in a fight. It's just a thing you can do.
Yeah. But here in Chrono Cross, you have stamina points. Every character can have a maximum of 7, and they can spend them on either doing light, medium, or heavy hits, each costing 1, 2, or 3 stamina points. Or they can spend 7 stamina points to cast a spell. Every spell in the game costs 7 stamina points, but by attacking the opponent, you gain element levels, which is to say you gain energy, which you can use to cast spells equipped to your character. Each character has spell slots that you equip spells into, and each of those spells can be used once per combat.
Fun. This is going to be convoluted, and we apologize in advance if we're not super clear on this, but we're going to do our best.
Yeah, so the basic gist here is that you want to attack to build up the energy to be able to cast higher level skills and then use stamina to cast those spells. You're allowed to go into negative stamina to cast the spells. So a lot of the game really encourages you through the UI design to, because the way that you attack automatically leads to a light, medium, and then heavy attack.
To be specific, by the way, I just looked this up. It's weak, strong, and then fierce, but effectively weak, strong, light, fierce. Medium, heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. My anime fighting game terminology is coming in too strong here.
It's just pedantry, but in case other people, like in case our dear listeners are going to then look up this thing, that is the exact same thing as what we're talking about here.
Yep. And so there, the UI here, because the cursor automatically follows down this chain of things, leaving you with 1 stamina point with which you are sort of encouraged by the game to button.
You can then choose to cast. Yeah.
You can choose to cast. You can also choose to attack in different patterns. In fact, different patterns are more optimal if you really want to get into the math of things. But the interesting things here are how spells are limited in different ways than before. So we've got to spend time. Whenever we use stamina, every other character on the battlefield regains some amount of stamina too. So if I spend 3 points doing a fierce attack, every other character will gain, for those 3 points, between, you know, 2.5 to a bit more than 3 points. Yeah. But they'll gain like around 3-ish points back themselves. And the enemy will also gain back points. So, you know, stamina usage is basically how this game is representing time, effectively. Let's see. Spells can only be used once. So there's a big portion of this game about like when should you use spells. This is emphasized by the field effects of this game. So basically, the game will track the last 3 spells cast. Those 3 spells that were cast will affect the strength of spells cast after that point. And there are 6 elements in the game, each with a pair that are strong against each other. So one of those pairs is white and black, unsurprisingly. If we have a field effect that is 3 white spells have been cast recently, then black spells are significantly weaker and white spells are significantly stronger. So if you see that a lot of one particular color of spell are being cast, you might want to cast different colors of spell in order to change it. But you can only use each spell once. So if you run out of blue spells, maybe you can't solve the problem anymore. And so this game has a lot of limitations in its combat that can potentially cause a lot of interesting and difficult situations. Does that all make sense to you, Blue, who already has spent time reading articles on this game?
Yeah, so to be clear here, I unfortunately did not get time to dabble in this game at all, actually. Which is unfortunate, because this is a relatively complex-looking system, which, to my understanding, gets simpler as you play it, but like is still fairly complex, right?
It's one of those unfortunate things where there is a lot going on in this system, and most of the game will never ask you to understand it outside of like one or two gimmick fights. They tune the difficulty to be fairly easy in case people didn't understand it, is how it feels. This game feels like the opposite side of something like Unlimited Saga we talked about years ago? A year ago?
Sure. Time ago.
Long enough ago. In that there's a lot going on, but it expected you to understand everything and balanced around that.
Yeah.
This game feels like it's balanced around that very basic pattern it sort of suggests you into of do a three-hit combo, then cast a spell.
Yeah, this game has a lot of elegant design written on its systems, which is the number 7, right? 7 stamina points and costing 7 stamina to cast a spell, paired with the way stamina recovers of whenever anyone uses stamina, everyone else gets some back. It ends up in practice becoming this like very seamless dance of, as I do things with one character, with character A, character B now will slowly get back up to being able to do things again, and so on and so forth down the line, and then it all just rotates. And on top of that is just, while we have our normal attacks, we then have these more powerful magical effects. And yeah, you just kind of like rinse and repeat through there. And outside of the mechanical motions of keeping damage flowing through the game, you have the normal trappings of, you know, monsters are weak to this, monsters are strong against fire, and so on and so forth. So simultaneously complicated, but like very familiar, I think, for people in the JRPG / command battle space, right?
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting how attack ties into this sort of stuff, because in a lot of these kinds of games, you can see that they go one of two ways quite often. Either attacks are very good, and so we shouldn't use magic very often.
Yep.
Or magic is really good, and so attacks are what we do, and we can't afford to use magic anymore.
Mm.
Most games seem to fall into one of those two camps. Like, of what we talked about today, like, Blue Reflection is very much in the why would you ever do a normal attack sort of side of things, whereas I think Persona Q has a more, I think, sorry. Actually, now I think about it, having said that statement, a lot of these games fall into a very good balance except for Blue Reflection.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your game should present the player with an interesting decision. And in a lot of command battle, the interesting decision is, do I do a normal attack or do I do something that uses a limited resource? And in the case of Chrono Cross, well, even your normal attack uses a limited resource in the form of this stamina, right?
And that limited resource gives you a different limited resource.
Yeah.
So no action stands by itself in this game. No action is just like, oh, I just do this. Everything has like 2 or 3 consequences to it.
There is this kind of spectrum along, you know, tabletop, like proper tabletop Dungeons and Dragons, sit down at a table and roll dice. Simplicity of systems, because it has to be simple enough for someone sitting at a table to understand. To, we can do a lot more behind the scenes. We can work with decimal numbers on a video game because the players don't need to keep track of it. The system does it automatically for them. Within that spectrum, there is somewhere to land to create like an interesting system for players to have interesting decisions at almost every point that is also understandable and not random to them. Because if a player doesn't understand the consequences of their actions, then the outcomes are effectively random, right? And that was one of the problems with Saga. And Chrono Cross is like straddling that line. You don't need to know what's going on under the hood, but your life will probably get a lot easier if you do.
Yeah. Like, knowing field effects definitely gives you a strong advantage so that you just can prevent very bad situations from happening and create a few very advantageous moments if stars align. Because it's very hard to manage that, because your opponents will also be casting spells that interfere with that setup. But
yep. And, you know, if you don't understand that, you can just go through with your typical pattern of weak, strong, fierce, magic, weak, strong, fierce, magic, weak, strong, fierce, magic. That'll probably carry through most of the game, right?
Yeah, it carries you through most of the game. If you want to engage with some of the sort of additional fights and like secret endings and things, you might have to get very familiar with how these work. But in general, for most of the mainline content, that is what you need. This game is also, not to go too off topic, there's a lot of neat things this game does. Like you only gain experience from fighting bosses, which raise your entire party's level by one. So there's no traditional experience system.
If you're familiar with D&D 5e, this would be milestone experience as opposed to encounter experience.
I mean, honestly, there's a lot of sort of D&D-ish like things here. Like the spells can be placed into slots. The slots have levels. So you can upcast or downcast spells, affecting their power in interesting ways. But that's sort of, no need to get into that here. But this game is definitely like a very, got a lot of very clever game designing ideas. I don't know if I recommend a regular person play this game, but if you're interested in design, it's a very smart and interesting game. And it has incredible music.
And I believe with that, we are good to go into our wrap up.
Yeah, let's hear some incredible music and then do our wrap up. To start our MP adventure, we talked about Blue Reflection, which, while giving you MP for every individual combat, it replicates the slog that MP systems often are intended to give in other games by having boss battles that are incredibly long, but that these boss battles and the systems of combat combine MP recovery with time management to create like a distinctive feel that also replicates some of the classical MP roles that MP has. And then we moved into
Persona Q, which is a great typical MP system with, you know, a dungeon design that really exploits it and asks you to really consider your resources, with a nice twist that depending on how you build yourself, you have a small buffer, a temporary buffer in every fight that you can just use and it comes back again, which makes you as a player try to get efficient with your MP. And then the game just goes, no, you can't be that efficient. And then it just provides this really nice tension between what the game's asking you to do and what you're trying to do and what resources you have to still drain. And we went from there into Persona 5 Strikers, out of the traditional command battle mold into a more action RPG sense. But because it has such a root in command battle RPGs from the Persona series, emphasizes this knockdown field control, fight control methodology that relies heavily on MP. So it still works in this action sense where there's leeway for you to preserve MP and even deal damage just from movement and physical attacks. But definitely, like by the end of the game, taxes your ability to space out your MP to just down a boss.
And then we moved into Tactics Ogre, which while most of the other games went of more of an approach of having a full gauge and going down, Tactics Ogre is more about filling up things. And so by changing the way in which players recover MP and gain MP, changes the way that they use MP and how they approach strategy within the combats they're engaging in. It makes Tactics Ogre ask more of the question, when should I cast the magic, as opposed to when will I run out of magic, which creates a very distinctive feel through its MP system. And then we finished off with Chrono Cross. And Chrono Cross, while not having a traditional MP system by any means, I think demonstrates some of the interesting aspects of these kinds of systems by not having any free actions. All actions tie into our limited resource, but it recovers rapidly over the course of the game. And so that creates a very different feel. And by having everything interconnected, creates a lot of interesting choices for the player to manage. And with that, thank you for listening, everyone. If you want to talk with us about anything we discussed, correct us, suggest games maybe we missed for this topic, you should tweet at the show, at Platin Pit. We always love talking about these games. And you can also find our personal Twitter accounts in the show notes, alongside our Facebook page and our email. And if you enjoyed the show, why not recommend it to a friend? Or if you're feeling especially fancy, review it on your preferred podcast service. Next month, we're going to be looking at how video game bosses and video game core loops either work together or against each other. And we're going to be looking at, hopefully, 30XX, Deus Ex Human Revolution, The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, Cuphead, and Wizard of Legend, which that is a combination of games I don't think many people expect to hear together.
I'm so concerned about the Deus Ex one because that's not a game either of us enjoy.
Look, we just have to play Deus Ex. It's fine. I mean, it's not, but like we can make it work because we love our listeners and we love these conversations.
Yeah.
And we will endure, or we will watch someone else play it.
Yeah. And we'll read up because there's actually a lot of historical stuff that's going on here in a lot of these games.
There's a lot of, it's actually really interesting in these lists, bringing up games that were big conversation pieces 10 years ago that have sort of, you know, because 10 years ago was a long time, faded out of the conversation. But when Human Revolution came out, there was a lot of discussion about how its boss fights didn't integrate. And that is a conversation for next time, not now.
Yeah.
And with that,
thank you for listening, everyone.